Welcome back. I'm Ian Masters, and this is Background Briefing. And joining us now is Russell McIver, who is the editor of Culprit Crime Reporter. His books include Corporate Crime and Violence, Big Business Power and the Abuse of the Public Trust, Corporate Predators, The Hunt for Mega Profits and the Attack on Democracy, and On the Rampage, Corporate Predators and the Destruction of Democracy. He's also the founder of the Single Payer Action and is currently working with the West Virginia local activist organization, MorganCountyUSA.org. Welcome to Background Briefing, Russell McIver.
Thank you for having me, Ian.
And the state of West Virginia, where you reside, is obviously very much in the news. It is extraordinary. I did speak to a reporter a couple of days ago from the Charleston Gazette just to get a sort of the human interest side of this story. I mean, it just shows you how much we are dependent upon clean drinking water, and the idea that 300,000 people have been without water for 4 days plus now is an extraordinary story in itself. So give me your sense as being there in the state. Are the people as outraged as I imagine, as certainly as I would be?
Well, there's real suffering. The people who can afford to are leaving the area of Charleston, going to Morgantown upstate or coming further east so that they can shower and, you know, drink water and eat. But the vast majority of the 300,000 can't afford to do that. And so they're there, and they've been 4 or 5 days without showers, and they drink only the water that's bottled and brought in. And they're getting angry. I've been listening to talk radio here. One state worker was very upset that she was told that she had to come into work and that there would be, you know, no leave policy. And at the same time, the state legislature, which just came in last week, was told that they could go home. So there is this double standard that cuts through the state. What most people are now starting to realize is that they've been sold a bill of goods about deregulation. The business community, both political parties, have made regulation a dirty word. And regulation means law and order. But we've seen last week the fruits of the deregulatory dogma that's spouted by almost universally by politicians of both parties when it comes to the coal and chemical industry in West Virginia. So I think, you know, people are starting to see through it a little bit now, and they're getting angry. And you're hearing that on the talk shows, the right-wing talk shows, people ripping these guys for, you know, spouting deregulation at every turn. And, of course, the political establishment, the corporate establishment, is now starting to backpedal in the face of the people's anger. And so there is a political opening now in the state. And so, for example, in the 2nd Congressional District, the Congresswoman is Capito. She's running for the U.S. Senate to take Jay Rockefeller's seat. Rockefeller just retired. And so there's an opening here. The presumed Democratic nominee is a guy named Nick Casey, who was who's the treasurer for Senator Joe Manchin. And Casey has been a lobbyist for the U.S. Chamber of Commerce. That's the Democrat. The Republican yet to be found is a field of about 10, is going to be a pretty hard right conservative. And so there's an opening there, and former CBS News guy Ed Rabel has decided to run. He's from Charleston. He lives in the Charleston area now, and he's decided to run as an independent and lead a slate of independents. So here in the Eastern Panhandle, we're going to be running a slate of independents for the House of Delegates, which is the lower house in the West Virginia legislature. So there's an opening here to make a difference, to push back against the corporate domination of the political system, of the media, of the universities, of the, you know, almost every major institution in the state has been the corporations and the coal companies and the chemical companies have a stranglehold. And so, but now we're trying to create a little bit of breathing room so we can try and make a difference.
Again, I'm speaking with Russell McIver, who is the editor of Corporate Crime Reporter. His books include Corporate Crime and Violence, Big Business Power and the Abuse of the Public Trust, Corporate Predators, The Hunt for Mega Profits and the Attack on Democracy, and On the Rampage, Corporate Predators and the Destruction of Democracy. He's also the founder of Single Payer Action and is currently working with the West Virginia local activist organization, MorganCountyUSA.org. So my understanding, though, in terms of the political class have been bought, both parties. By the way, the idea that the Democrat worked for the Chamber of Commerce is pretty extraordinary, to think that it is the Chamber of Commerce that brought the suit, was argued yesterday in the Supreme Court, you know, in favor of taking away the president's recess appointment authority. And there you have, you know, you think that the Democrats, recognizing that the Chamber of Commerce have put this suit up against the president, that they'd want to support the president as opposed to support the Chamber of Commerce. But I guess that's a story for another day. What about law and order? You've got the U.S. attorney here. He has not shown himself to be a fighter for justice. He basically gave Massey Energy a free pass, did he not, after that extraordinary, I think, what the worst...
There was an explosion at the Upper Branch mine in April 2010
right.
that killed 29 miners.
The worst industrial accident in 40 years in the United States. So,
And interesting, you know, Booth Goodwin's an interesting guy. You know, he did criminally prosecute a couple of the executives, Massey executives. His office, you know, apparently there's still an open investigation into the higher ranking executives there, Don Blankenship and so forth. But the reality is, when it came to the company itself, he blinked. You had this massive, like 400 page report from the Department of Labor identifying 300. Violations, 9 serious violations that led to this explosion that killed the 29 workers. So he had a roadmap, and instead he enters into this non-prosecution agreement with the corporation, effectively letting them off the hook. And so this is the kind of thing he's facing now. Now, I think there is a culture of, a difference here. Because you don't have a major Wall Street firm in Freedom Industries. I think the guy you talked to, Gutman, reported that one of the founders of this company has been, has been found guilty of tax evasion or something.
And possession for sale of 10 to 12 ounces of cocaine.
Right. And so this is not the same kind. It's not like, you know, one of these elite Wall Street firms or major Fortune 500 companies like Massey. And so he'll have, and that's the sort of the calculus on corporate crime, that he'll have more of an open field to go after this company if he finds that there's been criminal activity, and to criminally prosecute both the company and the executives if he finds criminal activity. But the investigation is still young. The reality, though, is that it's that kind of brute political power that allowed this leak to happen, because you have a West Virginia Department of Environmental Protection that knew about this facility, that knew about this storage tank, that knew about this chemical being there just a mile and a half upriver from the water facility, the drinking water facility, and, obviously did not take that threat seriously. And, I've been talking to waterworks people around the country. And what they do is they come up with these things called watershed assessment plans, where they're supposed to look upriver to the threats and then go and meet with the executives of these facilities and do a walkthrough of the plant and make sure that the threats are under control. So if you have a chemical facility or a nuclear power facility, then the executives from the water company are supposed to take proactive action and go and check out these facilities to make sure that there's not an active threat. The other thing that's happening is that I believe that this water company is privately owned. About 80% of the waterworks, drinking water utilities in the United States are publicly owned, and it used to be 100%. But there's this push for privatization of public water systems, and that, in fact, happened here. And when you talk to public water executives, one thing they'll tell you, Ian, is that when you put the profit motive into a public utility, you end up with the usual result, and that is executives cutting costs. Now, who knows what happened in this situation? Whether the executives cut costs here and didn't do the proper watershed assessment is an open question.
Well, Russell McIver, you know, in terms of placing our faith in the U.S. attorney there, Booth Goodwin, you know, presumably he's heard of the Clean Water Act. The fact that he gave Massey Energy a free pass, and after all, they were the ones that, remember, that trucked out all of the coal miners as a backdrop for Mitt Romney. The Labor Department had issued a 972-page report on the mine disaster at the Upper Big Branch mine that killed all of those miners, which was the Labor Department's study concluded that Massey's unlawful policies and practices were the root cause of this tragedy, and yet...
Well, absolutely, but here's the difference. Here's the difference between the two. You know, Massey is a major American company, very powerful, politically well-connected. I don't think you got that in Freedom Industries. So
they can make
the political economy of corporate criminal prosecution is this, that if the big law firm shows up at your office, it's less likely that the company or the executives are going to be criminally prosecuted and pay the price. If it's if it's a much smaller firm represented by less well-known lawyers, then the probabilities are, if there's criminal conduct, there will be criminal prosecution. So the lower you are in the totem pole, the more likely you're going to be criminally prosecuted. And I think that would be the case here.
Well, just turning to the second district, congressional district in West Virginia that you mentioned, where former CBS newsman Ed Rabel, a local resident, is running for Congress against the woman who's now running for the Senate, open Senate seat from Jay Rockefeller. And you also have, of course, Senator Manchin, and you have a governor there who's nominally a Democrat.
Nominally, yes.
So, you know, one of the excuses that Manchin and other of these blue dog Democrats have is that they can't go too far to the left because they won't get reelected, and that's why he's taken a pro-gun.
Well, that's what we're trying to test here, because a lot of people on the left say, forget about electoral politics. That it's, you're never going to get anywhere. You're never going to create the change you need through electoral politics. You're not going to win. You're going to get a small percentage of the vote. But we're trying to put that to the test here because, there's 100 members of the House of Delegates, and 10 of them are here in the Eastern Panhandle, and we're trying to recruit like 6 or 7 candidates to run. There's a couple things in our favor. One is you can win these races with 3,000 votes. There's about, for each one of these districts, it's about 25,000 to 30,000 voters. And so you need only 3,000. And even if they're right-wing districts, which they tend to be very hard-right districts. That's the thing about West Virginia, and that's why Manchin is a blue dog. But the reality is the Democrats give up on these districts. So that's why, increasingly progressive, lefty Democrats are giving up on the Democratic Party and saying, let's just run as independents. And because there's too much baggage being a Democrat because of all the chicanery and compromises and corruption, that they say, why should we carry that baggage? We knock on the door, we say we're Democrat, we get it slammed in our face. So you go around and you get the voter list and you pound the pavement and you meet people and you talk to them face to face, and you put it to them about the nature of deregulation. Why regulation was what regulation actually means, law and order, and now we have front and center this chemical spill that that destroyed the drinking water for 300,000 people for a period of 5 days at least, and so we're finding that that's resonating. Whether we can pull this off is an open question, because people are depressed. They're isolated. They're on their couch. Even the plugged in ones are plugged in and not meeting people and not going out and interacting. So it's an uphill battle. But we find that there's an opening. And the other thing is there's a I don't know if you've ever interviewed Richard Winger of Ballot Access News, Ian. And Richard has been documenting, you know, how it's very difficult to get on the ballot in most states. But in West Virginia, thanks to Richard's work and the work of some active ballot access activists here, we only need a 1% of the previous year's vote total to get on the ballot. So in these House of Delegates races, it's fewer than 100 signatures. And we don't need the signatures until August 1. So it used to be much earlier in the year, like April or May, and it used to be 2%, which is a higher figure. And for Ed Rabel, you know, he just needs a couple thousand signatures and he gets on. So because of Richard's work, it's easier ballot access for independents. Richard told me that there hasn't been a non-Republican, non-Democrat elected to the West Virginia legislature since 1906, when a prohibition candidate was elected. And there hasn't been in ever a non-Republican or Democrat elected to Congress from West Virginia. So we're hoping also to make history.
Well, but I understand, and just we've got to wrap it up here, Russell, but my understanding is that, you know, first of all, there's just a Gallup poll that said 23% of Americans now declare themselves liberals, 38% conservative. The liberals are making slow gains, at least those who identify themselves as such. It's often just a question of what the kind of questions you ask of people. People actually may be a lot more left-wing than they realize, even though some of them think that they're actually conservative. You just were saying that on right-wing talk radio in West Virginia now, people are really angry. That's one of the things that I find about our politics, that, you know, that people don't even, you know, the left doesn't, or the Democrats don't recognize how much potential there is out there in the terms of people's anxieties and understandings. It's just they don't frame and they don't approach things properly.
Well, we're going to be testing new ideas, new slogans, you know, new ways of talking to people. One thing, I read an article about a mayoral candidate down in Columbia, and they went around and they had these town hall meetings. And actually, through the town hall meetings, developed their platform. So it wasn't a top-down thing. It was a lateral kind of campaign where these town hall meetings, you know, and that's the great thing about Ed. He's a great listener. And I've had him out here to the Eastern Panhandle where 30, 40 people. And it's not one way. It's, okay, I want to hear what you have to say. What are your concerns? What are you know, what would you like this campaign to be? And just was like listening and taking notes. And so, you know, I think that's – and the guy down in Columbia actually won the election based on that strategy. So that's right. I think we have to do more listening and less talking and push forth a people's agenda.
Well, I thank you so much for joining us here today, Russell McIver.
Thank you, Ian.
Again, I've been speaking with Russell McIver, who's the editor of The Corporate Crime Reporter. His books include Corporate Crime and Violence, Big Business Power and the Abuse of the Public Trust, Corporate Predators, The Hunt for Mega Profits and the Attack on Democracy, and On the Rampage, Corporate Predators and the Destruction of Democracy. He's also the founder of the Single Payer Action and is currently working with the West Virginia local activist organization, MorganCountyUSA.org. We're going to take a brief station break and be back talking with the LA Times reporter, Adolfo Flores, who covered the trial of the police officers who killed Kelly Thomas.